DW, Living Planet, with Jordan Wilden.
When it comes to environment issues, many of us are aware of the problems. But what about the solutions? Well, everywhere they vary. In this edition of Living Planet, we're taking a look at some of the projects and ideas that might help solve, or at least shed some light onto, some of the biggest issues around us. From coming face to face with plastic pollution in Bali.
I went snorkeling and diving myself, both on some of Bali's islands, and I sometimes saw more plastic bags swimming in the ocean than actual fish. And I've never encountered anything like this before. I mean, I've been diving in a lot of places around the world. I've never seen turtles nibbling on plastic trash until diving in Bali.
To finding waste solutions in Kenya and how to grow coral as quickly as possible.
Currently, what I'm doing here is basically acting as a coral baby daddy. This is the coral nursery where we grow out little baby corals that were raised from sexual reproduction.
All this and more as we learn about some smart ideas here on Living Planet. Stick with us. But first, although plastic bags are now banned in Kenya, the country is still fighting back against tons of discarded plastic. It spoils the beaches, pollutes the sea, and is overwhelming entire neighbourhoods. A Swiss-based company called Mr. Green Africa wants to help clean it up. They first arrived in Kenya about 3 years ago with a recycling concept based on a fair trade idea. So collectors earn a living by supplying plastic waste. Antje Deakins went to find out more. Her report is presented by Inika Mules.
A conveyor belt floating in the air. This is the strange sight which greets you upon entering Mr. Green's factory hall in Nairobi. Of course, the conveyor belt is actually attached to the ground, but the base is covered up by huge bags full of plastic waste. Several workers throw the garbage onto the assembly line, while others try to sort through the plastic as quickly as possible. CEO Kieran Smith explains that the garbage in the bags has already been sorted for some criteria.
Here, you can see the different colours. We have white, red, blue, green, and so on.
Mr. Green set up shop in the Kenyan capital a few months ago. The founder of the company studied in Switzerland and started a small business there with some fellow students. But recycling plastic in Kenya is something else entirely. Kieran Smith says there are advantages here compared to European countries.
In Germany or other European countries, a lot of plastic is actually being burnt. And now people are thinking about how they can stop burning plastic and turn it into a resource instead. Here in Kenya, because they don't burn plastic yet, we can make that jump directly.
This is his business idea in a nutshell. Garbage collectors take the plastic to locations throughout the city. From there, the plastic is taken to the factory where everything gets sorted, cleaned, and finally, shredded. Customers buy the plastic chips which are created during this process, up to 4.5 tons daily. They use the plastic chips to produce new products. This protects both resources and the environment, Kieran explains.
It always seems like you're either doing something good for the world or you're making money. I think our model shows that while we're doing something good, we're also making money.
One of the collection points is at a slum near the largest garbage dump in Nairobi. Patrick Kamani is one of the garbage collectors who brings plastic here. Sometimes he has a lot, other times not so much.
It depends on how much I find. Sometimes I even come here several times a day. But today, this here is my first bag.
The employee at the collection point weighs the bag and tells Patrick how much money he'll get paid.
This is 1.12 off, he will get 21 shillings.
Patrick's bag contained just over a kilo in plastic. He gets paid the equivalent of about 20 euro cents. That's not much, but Patrick says it all adds up for him.
It depends. You can even make more than 3k per month.
That's about 30 euros a month. Garbage collectors are still among the poorest of the poor in Nairobi, but Mr. Green hopes to offer them a new perspective. People who prove they are reliable or bring unusually large amounts of plastic will receive extra payments on top of being paid the normal fees. It's all part of the Mr. Green business philosophy, Kieran Smith explains.
The innovation in our business model is not really how we process the recycled plastic. What's innovative is the way we obtain the material and how we actually integrate this informal labour market into our value chain.
Garbage isn't usually sorted in Kenya. Everything eventually finds its way to one of the country's many dumps or ends up being thrown away somewhere else. Although plastic bags have been banned in the East African country for some time now, there's still tons of plastic to be found underneath the garbage piles. The garbage is also littered along the roadsides and especially in the slums. The collectors clean up here, say Deborah and Judy, both 13 years old, who live next to a collection point.
When you drink water, you throw the plastic and they come and they take them.
I think they are helping in conserving the environment by collecting the plastics around our living area.
Mr. Green has set up 25 collection points in Nairobi so far. By the end of next year, it will be 40. Kieran also hopes to start a new service where collectors are able to pick up plastic waste directly from households. For him, it's clear that the collectors are changing the city.
Garbage collectors, or the people who deal with garbage, are always marginalised. But to us, they are superheroes, and we want to treat them like superheroes.
But there's still a long way to go. Currently, less than 10% of the waste in Kenya is recycled. Mr. Green wants to increase this figure, together with his garbage-collecting superheroes.
That report was filed by Antje Diekans and was presented by Ineke Mules. Over in Cameroon, they have a Mr. Green of their own, one man who is making business from innovative recycling. He's gathered a group of young people who collect waste tires, and then inmates in Cameroon repurpose them into environmentally friendly flip-flops. Natalie Muller presents this report, which was filed by Eong Blaze.
Worn-out car tires accumulate in dusty roadside heaps in Yaoundé. The Cameroonian capital has no public refuse service to take care of recycling. Even just left where they are, the tyres can eventually leak toxic chemicals into the water supply. Many tyres end up burned, polluting the air.
A lot of people culturally believe it just has to be burnt. So we are also using this as an opportunity to sensitise them, that we can give an alternative to these tyres, which will be more durable, which will not affect our environment.
But where others see unsightly waste, activist Christian Leke sees a resource, and he's enlisted local young people to help him gather them up. The tyres are taken some 20 miles outside Yaoundé to a prison. Here, inmates turn them into sandals. Leke says the work is empowering and boosts environmental awareness.
In our engagement in prisons, we saw the process of transforming tyres, firstly, as an effort to protect the environment, as an effort to support, the global conversation on climate change. And we saw the inmates in prison as that first community with whom we can talk, because a lot of people are banned on them. But they have time, they need people to give them an opportunity to transform.
The prison workers also get 50% of the profits when the sandals are sold, with the other half going to the prison and Cameroonian authorities. Woven in bright colours on top, the old tyres provide the rubber soles. Abroad, they fetch around 35 euros a pair. The sandals are also available here in Cameroon, of course, where Leke sells them himself for somewhat less than on the international market. Emmanuel Ayuk has just bought a pair of the sandals from the trunk of Leke's car.
It's a wonderful product and I love it, and equally to support the prison project, because like I heard, it's made from prisoners. It's made from the prison. Prisoners made it. So in a way, it's to push them, to tell them that they have a place, they're not forgotten.
And for every 7 pairs of flip-flops sold, that's one less complete tyre littering Yaoundé's streets and polluting the environment.
That report was presented by Natalie Muller and was filed by Eong Blaze.
This must be underwater love, the way I feel it seeping all over me. This must be underwater love, the way I feel it. O que que é esse amor da água? Deve sentir muito parecido a esse amor. This is it, underwater love. It is so deep, so beautifully liquid. Esse amor com paixão. Ai. Esse amor com paixão. Ai, que coisa. After the rain comes sun.
So far, we've heard about some of the innovative solutions to waste on the African continent, but what about in the rest of the world? The Indonesian islands make up some of the most beautiful places on Earth, but they're troubled by a problem which threatens the water surrounding them. DW reporter Anna Sophie Brendlin has just returned from the Indonesian island of Bali. So, Anne-Sophie, you just returned from your vacation in Bali, and we now finally don't have to be jealous of your wonderful Instagram pictures of beaches and sunsets whilst we're here in Bonn in the cold and snow recently as well. Your vacation looked amazing, but you also found there's a darker side to the picture-perfect scenery of Bali. Plastic trash. Tell us more.
Yeah. I mean, I may be super tanned and rested and happy, but I'm still also kind of in shock when it comes to all the plastic trash I've seen. I mean, I knew Bali has been battling a plastic pollution problem ever since this video of a British diver called Rich Horner, who was swimming through a sea of plastic off the coast of Bali, went viral last spring. But I kind of thought, well, that must be an exception, right? I mean, I thought he probably purposefully went somewhere where plastic trash is being thrown into the sea to make a point. I thought there's no way that all of Bali's waters look like that. But the sad answer is they often do, especially during rainy season, which was going on when I was there. And I went snorkeling and diving myself, both on some of Bali's islands, like Nusa Penida and Nusa Lembongan. They're famous for diving, as well as the Gili Islands. That's a tourist hotspot of Lombok. And I sometimes saw more plastic bags swimming in the ocean than actual fish. And oh, wow. I've never encountered anything like this before. I mean, I've been diving in a lot of places around the world, from Egypt to South Africa to Thailand and Australia and Fiji and Mexico. And I've never seen turtles nibbling on plastic trash until diving in Bali. And that was such a devastating sight. I mean, I actually teared up underwater and collected so much plastic trash that I couldn't carry it on my own anymore. And I had to keep swimming back through the boat and like dispose of it and then go down again. And it was insane.
That's horrible. It sounds really emotional, actually, as well. Where's all the plastic coming from?
It's hard to say. I mean, Bali is located in the middle of the Indonesian through flow. That's a current that streams from the Pacific Ocean into the Indian Ocean through the Straits of Indonesia. So that means that plastic waste could either be local or it could be brought in from as far as the Pacific Ocean, depending on the currents. But it's most likely that the trash comes from Indonesia, which is currently the second largest plastic polluter in the world, right after China. And the problem is that the plastic trash in the ocean also moves depending on the currents. So one day, a specific dive site could be totally littered with trash, and the next day, the waters could be crystal clear again because the currents just transported the plastic elsewhere. And that makes cleaning up the ocean really hard as well, because you just never know where the plastic is.
And that's obviously a huge problem. So what's actually being done about it? Is anything being done about it?
Yeah, sort of. I mean, the Balinese are aware of their plastic problem. Last year, officials in Bali declared a garbage emergency across 6 kilometers of the island's beaches. They deployed around 700 cleaners and 35 trucks. On some days, they actually collected up to 100 tons of rubbish. which is crazy. You can see signs offering beach cleanups everywhere. So basically, they're asking volunteers, tourists, locals, whoever wants to meet up in the early morning hours to collect all of the plastic trash that has been washed onto the beaches during high tide. And you wouldn't believe it, but in the morning, the beaches are covered in plastic trash, and to the point that sometimes you can't even see the sand anymore. It's really, really crazy. And most bars and restaurants don't have any plastic straws. They give you reusable bamboo or metal straws instead, which I thought was really cool. But the problem is you can still buy plastic bottles everywhere. And given that you can't drink the tap water in Bali, you see them lying around everywhere on the beaches, in the water. And the problem really comes down to awareness, I would say, because many tourists simply don't seem to care and don't dispose of their plastic trash properly. And more NGOs and collectives are actually trying to change that. So recently there was a Berlin sprayer collective, the One Up Crew, that created the first 3D coral graffiti of the island of Nusa Penida, where I also was. And they teamed up with several NGOs dedicated to coral reef conservation and environmental change to create an underwater coral graffiti, which is supposed to draw attention to the worldwide coral die-off and also the problem of plastic pollution. They created it by putting this grit into the water and breeding corals on it. And that's kind of a neat idea to tap into Bali's sort of overly present Instagram hype to maybe feature some of, you know, some environmental news instead of just sexy sunset swing photos.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. The thing that's interesting here, actually, is that they've obviously seen that there's a big problem and started making changes there. Now that you've been face to face with that, have you been thinking about plastic differently since you've come back? Has that left an impact on you?
I think I've always sort of thought about plastic as an issue, but just seeing it in the water like that and so prevalent and in a way that I've never thought possible really shocked me. And it just made me realize that we're beyond the point that I thought we would be in and that something needs to be done. And I think me personally, yeah, of course, I can cut down on plastic more, but I think seeing all these clueless and carefree tourists just throwing their trash everywhere and just littering and being more busy taking their little selfie underwater than to maybe like save a turtle from dying. That kind of was what frustrated me when it comes to just humanity in general. It was just really, I kind of came back jaded and angry.
Yeah, I mean, following this so much and reporting on this, you start thinking about it anyway, but I think coming like face to face and sort of actually seeing just how much makes a huge impact. I've come across so many surfers and divers and other people that are really involved with the oceans that have just been totally changed by actually witnessing that firsthand.
Yeah, I mean, if you see a little turtle nibbling on a plastic bag, it just, my heart died. Like it's horrific. It's just devastating.
That was DW's Anna-Sophie Brandlin. The Berlin Spray Collective isn't the only group working with coral. In Florida, a group of scientists has found a way to grow coral incredibly quickly. This is particularly useful in the area where the reef actually acts as a buffer from waves generated during the storm season. Maria Bacalapolo visited the Moat Lab to find out more.
It used to take 6 years to produce 600 corals here. Now at the Moat Marine Laboratory, a coral reef research and restoration center, they can cut and produce that many corals in one afternoon. Christopher Page is a marine biologist at the center.
Currently, what I'm doing here is basically acting as a coral baby daddy. This is the coral nursery where we grow out little baby corals that were raised from sexual reproduction. The first thing that we're looking for when we raise coral babies, we're looking to grow them out in a very clean environment because these things are very small. They're maybe a millimeter or so in size, and they're very sensitive to a lot of changes in the environment.
Once they have the corals past the seeding stage in the lab, some, such as a staghorn coral, are transferred to the next stage, growing quickly on handmade tree-like structures anchored to the ocean floor. Others are grown on small plaster plugs, then literally glued into suitable environments. But tragically, climate change is a double-edged sword, increasing storm strength while at the same time weakening the reef biology through bleaching and disease. Moat Marine Laboratory has found a way to grow corals up to 40 times faster in their laboratory and place them back into the wild. giving some hope for healing damage to the ecosystem.
I'm Dr. Dave Vaughn from Moat Marine Laboratories here in the Florida Keys. And where you are right now is in the International Center for Coral Reef Research and Restoration. And what we do here in this wet lab is work on corals for the sexual reproduction, where they go from a free swimming larvae in the water column to actually settling down on some sort of substrate. So it's called settlement. So what we have in here are recruits that are over 1 month old, and they're still less than the size of a half of a head of a pin. In some, they get to the huge size of maybe a pencil eraser, just a few millimeters, in maybe a half a year to a year. And that's why in the wild, only one in a million may make it on the years that have all the right conditions perfectly. And so here in captivity, we can get much better survival.
Here, Dr. David Vaughn, the manager of the Coral Restoration Program, has found a technique called microfragmenting, where a coral is treated in a particular way to stimulate growth. A reaction similar to human skin healing where it is cut. It can take coral up to 75 years to reach sexual maturity, but the lab has reduced that time frame to a fraction. Last year, Category 5 Hurricane Irma created waves as high as 10 meters, which the barrier reef reduced by 2.5 meters of swell.
Well, the Nature Conservancy recently did a study that just a loss of 1 meter of the corals that are protecting existing cities, residences, things like that, the loss of just 1 meter of coral reef will double the cost of damage from storms. So when you think about a storm that costs a few billion dollars from a hurricane and we lose some of our corals and it's going to double the damage, not only do you double the monetary economic damage, but that means that water's going further inland. More people are being at risk. More homes and businesses are at risk.
The restoration program aims to restore the corals of the Florida Reef Tract while attempting to build it higher to withstand stronger, more frequent hurricanes.
But new technologies now allow us to grow a size of a 100-year-old coral in just a few years. And so the technology's there, and I'm sure we're just in the beginning of learning new technologies, hopefully here in Florida. And we surely need it internationally to all those islands around the tropic zone that are going to lose their entire islands if we don't help build up their coral reefs.
Climate change's effects are not just storm-related. Warming ocean waters are also absorbing carbon dioxide, or CO2, from the atmosphere and becoming dramatically more acidic. The lab's large tanks contain samples of corals being stress-tested for both ocean acidification and temperature conditions expected by the end of the century. Heather Page has been examining the interaction of coral, seaweed, and sponges.
So ocean acidification is another issue coming from this carbon dioxide emissions. So when carbon dioxide is emitted into the atmosphere, not all of it stays there. Some of it actually dissolves into the oceans. That ultimately leads to acidification. If one species of coral might do way worse under acidification, but maybe another species doesn't really seem to care about it.
In 56 tanks, they have set up half of the tanks to mirror conditions found now and the others replicating increasing steps of temperature and acidity of water projected for the coming century.
The Florida Keys may be only a place to visit for people when the time and the weather conditions are good. But I also like to see a little bit of hope, and that is two things. One is there's hope with corals. We have found some new technologies to grow corals faster and in larger number. And some corals that are resisting today's conditions, and even hopefully corals that will resist the conditions of tomorrow. But that's only a small stopgap. That gives us the time of maybe a few decades or at least this next century, to change things. But if we don't start changing things, then all bets are off.
The Moat team aims to put 100,000 corals in the ocean by 2019. In the long term, they have more ambitious targets as they look to advances in marine robotics to leverage productivity. The research is vital. Without a healthy reef, the Keys will be fully exposed to the ocean's wrath. For DW, I'm Maria Bacalopoulou in the Florida Keys.
Can't get enough Living Planet? Visit dw.com/livingplanet, where you'll find the most current show and a vast archive of our previous episodes. Get the show whenever you want. Listen on iTunes or on SoundCloud, or find Living Planet in DW's Media Centre.
That brings us to the end of this edition of Living Planet. Many thanks to Ileana Giladucci and Leon Novak for their help producing this show, and to you for listening. If you liked the show, please consider rating us on iTunes or telling a friend about Living Planet, and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Have a question you'd like us to address in an upcoming episode? Send us an email, livingplanet@dw.com, or you can tweet us at @dw_environment. I have been, and still am, Jordan Wilden. Until next time.